Years ago, when I was just starting out in ministry, one of my jobs at Mahaffey Camp, the pastors are the ones who work at Mahaffey historically, and one of my first jobs was to be the guy in the pop can shed. Little kids would pick up pop cans, and we would refund the 10-cent deposit that was on that pop can, and kids loved doing that. And Laurel and I worked together in that little shed back there. One day, a little boy came up to us, and this little boy had a little bit of a speech impediment. Wasn't bad for his age, you know. That was kind of cute, even. And as he was talking to us, I had a little difficulty understanding what he was saying, and I'm giving him the dime for his pop can. And his mom is standing there, and his mom said, and I think his name was Nathan, I'm not sure of that. His mom said, "This is Nathan. Nathan was born deaf." And I thought, oh, they must have done surgery or something, you know, and that's why he has a little bit of the speech impediment. He's just learning to hear and repeat sounds. And I said, oh, but he hears now. And she said, yes, we prayed for him at our church, and God miraculously restored his hearing. And I went, wow, that's pretty cool. I've never been in a church where something like that particular thing happened, and I was kind of amazed by it. I remember one time one of our missionaries was here at Kermansville, and I was talking to her privately, and she told me a story about a dog that had been chasing one of the pastors there in Africa. And this pastor shared that this dog had been chasing him, and that he was very frightened, and he took a piece of iron, like an iron staff that he had, and he hit the dog. And that was the only way that he survived. And one of the other people there said, you know, I think that was created by the village shaman, the witch doctor. I think that he was responsible for that. And I was praying for you that very day. One of those kinds of stories, you know. And the missionary said that when she saw the witch doctor the next time, he had a large bruise on the side of his head. Huh. That's kind of weird, isn't it? I never had anything like that happen where I live. One more story. This was an Alliance missionary whose name is Marge. She was in my church, and she told a story of in Colombia, where she served, they were really having trouble working with this one group of Indians that they weren't believing. They were very resistant, and one of the ringleaders, so to speak, of that tribe was a very large, outspoken, obnoxious kind of man, but he really had a large following. Whatever he said, the people believed, and he died unexpectedly. And so they were having a funeral service for him as they were gathered there, and this was not a real primitive culture, like they weren't in the woods or something like that. It was in the city. But the Indians, of course, live in the city in Colombia as well as in the jungles. And he had been in the hospital. They pronounced him dead. He's laying there in a casket. They don't embalm there in Colombia. And they're doing a funeral, and all of a sudden he sat straight up. And he looked at the people sitting in the pews, and he said, Jesus is real. He sent me back to tell you that. And he became a follower of Christ for the rest of his days, and the whole tribe was influenced by his decision. I can remember when Marge told that story, one of my leaders in my church there came up to me and says, what kind of stuff is this she's talking about? And I, you know, when I was young, you think I'm obnoxious now. I was so cocky and arrogant when I was young. And I just looked at this guy and I said, well, that's New Testament Christianity. You should familiarize yourself with it. But the bottom line is, I'm not even familiar with that, are you? That is so unusual, isn't it? Those stories, when you hear them, probably part of you says, I'm not really sure if I believe that because I haven't experienced that in my life. And so when we feel that way, like, I don't know that I'm buying into that, I think we make up excuses. I've heard a lot of reasons that we don't see miracles like that. One of the reasons I've heard is, well, the Bible is complete now. We have all 66 books. The apostolic era where Jesus and the apostles did all those miracles, that has come to a close. And we are in a new dispensation where miracles like that don't happen. You know what? I'm not buying it. I'm not buying that, because if that's the case, there's a lot of liars that I have heard. A lot of missionaries have told a lot of lies. Others say, well, you know, the reason we don't see that is because really we shouldn't be seeking God for those kinds of things. We should just trust Him. Just don't bother Him and accept whatever His will is. In fact, I spoke to a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, whose wife was expecting a baby, and the preliminary tests where there's a problem with this baby, and the doctor said, you should abort this baby. Well, my friend and his wife didn't believe in abortion. They felt that human life is sacred at any stage, and so they weren't doing that. And I said, I'll be praying that everything goes all right with the pregnancy. And my friend said, don't do that. Don't bother God with that. Just let God do whatever He's going to do. And I think that that's part of it, that we don't see that because we feel like we ought to just not ask God about stuff like that. That just kind of seems cold to me. Doesn't that seem cold to you? Don't bother God. He's busy with other things. He's going to do what He's going to do. And if you knew what was going on, you just leave Him alone. I don't think so. Still others say, well, you know, the reason we don't see those kind of miracles that Pastor Steve talked about at the beginning of this is because we don't have enough faith, and that's probably closer to the truth, but I think that's a really simplistic answer. Really simplistic. We are looking at a passage today, and if you'd like to, please open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 13. I would really encourage you to follow along in the text. It's on page 970 in a Pew Bible, where we're going to be. Matthew 13, 53 is where we'll start. And in these passages, the Scripture, in this passage, the Scripture talks about Jesus not doing some miracles in a certain time and place. And I believe that He didn't do the miracles because those people found themselves in a rather self-imposed kind of bondage that prevented them from experiencing the miraculous power of God. So let's look at the passage and see if we can see some of the same bonds that they had tying us down and preventing us from seeing the work of God. Matthew chapter 13, we're going to read about five verses. We're going to start at verse 53. Follow along as I read, please. When Jesus had finished these parables, He moved on from there. Coming to His hometown, He began to teach the people, in their synagogue. Now get this, He's in His hometown. He's back in Nazareth, okay? Coming to His hometown, He began to teach the people in their synagogue, and they were amazed. Where did this man get this wisdom and these miraculous powers, they ask? Isn't this the carpenter's son? Isn't his mother named Mary? And aren't his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? Aren't all his sisters here with us? Where did this man get all these things? And key phrase, they took offense at Him. But Jesus said to them, only in His hometown and in His own house is a prophet without honor. And verse 58, look how sad this verse is. And He did not do many miracles there because of their lack of faith. Wow. Jesus didn't do many miracles there because of their lack of faith. They were in bondage, in a sense, to disbelief. And if you give this passage some thought, you're going to see there are some bonds that enslave us, that hold us down, that keep us from really experiencing the work of God in our life. These bonds all happen to begin with the word R, or letter R, rather. If you're keeping notes, you could just write the three down. They're easy to remember. One of them is a made-up word, because although my wife objects to me making up words, I love doing it. Okay? But the first one is not a made-up word. It's a word you might be familiar with. It is the word reductionism. And I think that sometimes reductionism, that is losing our sense of wonder because of our understanding of the intricacies of nature, prevents us from really experiencing the awesome power of God. You know, when I was a kid, I was a huge Star Trek fan. Loved Star Trek as a kid. I'm a fan even as an adult. I've been to the movie. I saw it as a matinee just a week ago, you know. Love Star Trek. And I can remember, this is how much of a Star Trek fan Laurel and I are. One time we dressed as I was dressed as Captain Kirk. Who were you dressed as? Lieutenant Uhura? No, not quite. But anyway, we're Star Trek fans. Well, one of the most beloved characters on Star Trek was that old Mr. Spock. You remember him? He had the pointy ears, and he was the Vulcan. He was ever in control of his emotions. Now, if you're not a Star Trek fan, don't check out for this part of the story, or this part of the sermon, because this is a good example of what you and I do is what he did. There was an episode called This Side of Paradise when Mr. Spock got blasted with some kind of a drug-type substance that really made him laid back. Oh, it made him mellow out. And you saw him laughing and swinging from trees and doing everything that a Vulcan would never find himself doing. And at one point, he's sitting in a meadow, reclining in the arms of a beautiful blonde, and he's looking with her at the clouds in the sky. And Mr. Spock says something very interesting. He says this, "That one looks like a dinosaur, and that one like a dragon. You know, I can tell you exactly what makes them appear in the sky, and even the shapes that they have, but I have never stopped to see their beauty until now." You see, he had reduced the beauty of nature to a scientific explanation. And author Philip Yancey, in his book Rumors of Another World, says that's reductionism. And it's something all of us are taught to do. We take magnificent things and reduce them to scientific explanation. We take a sunset and we say, oh yeah, I know it does that. It's the way the rays are bent as they come into the atmosphere at that angle and the water droplets and everything. And we say, yeah, that's the sunset. And we lose the marvel that God intends us to have at that. Or we say, see baby calves. 'Tis the season for baby calves. Clyde and Marcia have a good story about their calves. I'll ask them about that later. But I don't think there's hardly any animal that's cuter than a baby calf, you know? And I can remember when I was a kid saying, doggone it, this is fun feeding them with the milk, you know, and everything else out of the bottle. This is so cool. And now, because I have reduced that awesome thing of a baby calf, I look at it and say, what's it going to be, about a year before we can eat that thing? Maybe two? 18 months, Clyde says. Reductionism. Something awesome. We reduce it to a hamburger. Or how about this? Seeing a baby being born, you know? Have you ever seen a baby being born? Meh. I've seen it so many times on the Discovery Channel, I don't even need to look anymore. Ah, don't do that. Do not lose your sense of wonder and your ability to appreciate the awesomeness of this world, or you will be just like the people in Jesus' hometown. Look at verse 54. It says, coming to his hometown, he began to teach the people in their synagogue, and they're amazed, but then they start reducing this, and they start asking the questions, you know, I don't know, where did he get this? And where did he get these miraculous power? And they reduce their focus on Jesus' teaching and miracles by focusing on the fact that he's just a hometown boy. We know his whole family. He's nothing special. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying science is a bad thing, but it causes us to do that sort of thing. I love science, but if through it I am reducing my appreciation of the grandeur of this world to nothingness, then I lose. If you are going to see God do amazing things in your life, then you're going to have to break free from your tendency toward reductionism. And you're going to have to back up from your analytical viewpoints of life just for a moment. You're going to have to let go of the notion that you can figure out everything there is to figure out in this universe because you've watched 30 episodes of Nova and you're always on the Discovery Channel. Love that stuff. You're going to have to engage in enough humility to admit there are some things that God understands and has created that you're never going to figure out. And you're going to have to break free from reductionism to see the awesomeness of what God has made, so that you can see his work in your life. Let me talk to you about the second bond, and this is the second R word. It's rationalism. Rationalism. Now, we use the word to rationalize in a variety of different ways. We use it in a negative way when we rationalize the bad things we do by explaining why I didn't really have any options. That's not how I'm using it today. We use rationalism in another way as well. We use it to rationalize away the unexplainable. We see something that just couldn't be explained in our own human terms, and we figure out an explanation for it. And it is so confusing to me how we can do that with the things of God, but other things we don't bother to do it with. You know, I decided I was going to watch, have you seen this this show about supernatural ghosts, Penn State thing. Have you seen that on TV? I just can't believe people watch that and buy into that stuff. And yet, the same people who are sitting in front of that going, oh, I shouldn't be this way. My wife's looking at me like, Steve, quit making fun of people. Okay. But those same people, when you tell them about what Marge said happened with the Indian in Columbia, say, I don't know, I believe that. I want to rationalize. He wasn't really dead. I mean, you're looking at a developing country when you're looking at Colombia. You're looking at a primitive people when you're looking at the Indians there. Probably he was just sick. And we rationalize away supernatural things. We want to deny the supernatural. And we do it. Here's a way we do it. I think maybe that cancer just went into remission. Rationalization. No, I think maybe God healed them. Maybe. Could just be remission, though. Not sure about that. And very subtly, we deny the supernatural and we rob ourselves of the opportunity to see God do awesome things. They were doing it right here in verse 55. I think this is just the carpenter's son. He's not that special. His mother's Mary. I don't know if I buy this stuff about her being a virgin. There's other kids, James, Joseph, Simon, Judas. There's even sisters. Well, what do you think? I don't think. Now, if we want to break free of that bondage of rationalization, we're going to have to begin to choose to expect to see, even look for, the supernatural. Because if we don't, we'll never see it. Let me give you the third bond. And this is a word I made up. Reactionism. Reactionism. It's reacting against something just out of irrationality. And I've noted this human tendency. I see it in marriage all the time. You know, maybe my wife says to me, you know, I think we're spending just a little more money than we should spend. And I react and say, no, I'm not. In fact, I'm going to spend more. You know, as soon as she says that, I didn't even want to spend more. But as soon as she says that, I become defensive and I spend. Or maybe your coworker says to you, you know, I think maybe that we need to slow down here. I think we're going to burn ourselves out if we keep at this pace. And you work even harder because you want to prove to him, I can work hard. I can do it better. You know, reactionism even shows up in our Christian faith. Let me give you an example. Maybe you have a family member who is, in your opinion, a little overzealous in his religious belief. You know, this family member, maybe she sees demons behind every bush. Well, yeah, there she goes, talking about demons again. And maybe she thinks Jesus is coming back this Tuesday at 7 o'clock. You know, there she goes, on about the end times. Or maybe she has embarrassed you by handing out gospel tracts to clerks in stores when you're shopping together. You're like, God, do you have to do that? That's so embarrassing when you do that. You know, maybe those things kind of bug you. It's not that you don't think there are demons. You know there are demons, but you just kind of react negatively when she's talking about them. And it's not that you don't think Jesus could be back on Tuesday. Man, I think he could be back before I could finish his sermon, but you just kind of react. Ah, boy, I hear that from her all the time. And it's not that you don't think people should hand out gospel tracks, you just react negatively to her pushiness because she's always doing it, and you react against that, so you're not doing it. That happens in looking for miracles as well. And it is a tool that Satan can use to keep you from looking for the power of God. I'll tell you how it hits me. When I turn on the television and I see what I consider to be charlatans faking miracles on televisions, you know what I'm talking about? TV church, where all that high-end emotional hype is going on, and I just don't believe that's from God. I don't want to be anything like that. And so I disassociate myself from that to the point that I'm not even going to talk about miracles because someone will think I'm like him. Reactionism. And I think reactionism makes us stop looking to God to do miraculous things. And it can even make our faith become nothing more than an intellectual pursuit. Are you a Christian? Yes, I am. I believe in all 66 books of the Bible and the verbal plenary theory of inspiration. You know, it's just an intellectual thing. It's not a personal relationship with God. It's not a place where we see God doing miracles. And in fact, we're offended by someone who does that and we're reacting against them. That is what's happening in verse 57. That is why verse 57 says, they took offense at him. Ah, I know him. I'm not going to believe any of that stuff from him. And Jesus didn't do many miracles there because of that. You see, if you want to break free from the bonds of reactionism, then you're going to have to let go of your cynicism, and you're going to have to embrace the possibilities that God can do amazing things. Because, by the way, the Scripture does say all things are possible with God. Nothing is impossible with God. You know, all of these things boil down to right thinking about God. To think correctly about Him is really the key to seeing Him do amazing things in your life. And right thinking about God acknowledges that God is worthy of our worship. Above everything else, He is worthy of our worship. Do you know that song? We're going to sing it in a couple minutes here. It's the song, God of Wonders. It really expresses, God, we recognize that You are worthy of our worship. Listen just as I read the words. It says, Lord of all creation, of water, earth, and sky, heavens are Your tabernacle. Glory to the Lord on high. God of wonders beyond our galaxy, You're holy, holy. The universe declares Your majesty. You're holy, holy. You're the Lord of heaven and earth. Early in the morning, I will celebrate Your light. And when I stumble in the darkness, I'll call Your name by night. God of wonders, You're beyond our galaxy. You're holy, holy. The universe declares Your majesty. You're holy, holy. See, if you personally are going to break free from reductionism, then you're going to have to stop seeing life as just a scientific process. You're going to have to stop seeing the world as just the elements that you've seen it in. You're going to have to see that God is behind it all. And when you look at the birth of a child, you go, wow, God did that. And when you look at a sunset, you're like, oh, man, I never could have hung those water droplets to bend that light that way. That is remarkable. And when you hear someone sing a song, you don't just say, don't they have a good voice? Well, but they're going to go far. You say, God, You're incredible to have put those pipes in her. Wow. You break free from the reductionism by worshiping the One who is worthy of our worship. Right thinking says God alone is worthy of our worship. And second, right thinking about God acknowledges that He's worthy of our faith. Are you willing to believe God? These people in this passage weren't willing to believe God. Sometimes you might hear someone say, you know, God did this really cool thing in my finances. When I started to tithe, He did a miracle in my finances. And you want to kind of rationalize that away and say, well, I doubt it. You probably started paying attention to your spending more, and that's how that got under control. And you just dismiss the miracle. You say it was a miracle, buddy. I don't know. I think it was just a natural occurrence of taking care of your money better, you know? You're going to have to quit doing that and trust that God really, really does miracles in people's life. Now, you might be thinking, I don't know if I can do that because are you asking me, Pastor Steve, to trade in my brain so I can see God doing this? Not at all. Not at all. Ravi Zacharias, in one of his early books, tells a story about Robert Jastrow. Do you know Robert Jastrow? Robert Jastrow was the director of the Goddard Institute for Space Studies. Okay, he's a guy that has a brain in his head. Robert says this, Jastrow says this. He says, the details differ, but the essential elements in the astronomical and biblical accounts of Genesis are the same. Okay, here's what he's saying. He's saying, when I look through a telescope and when I study science and when I study the heavens, the sky, The information that I deduce from that is a lot like what people have been reading in here for a long time. Here's what he says. This is an exceedingly and strange development, unexpected by all, except the theologians. You see, they have always believed the word of the Bible, but scientists didn't expect to find evidence for an abrupt beginning because we had, until recently, such extraordinary success in tracing the chain of cause and effect backward in time. However, Jastrow says, at this moment, it seems as though science will never be able to raise the curtain on the mystery of creation. And for the scientist who has lived by his faith in the power of reason, the story ends like a bad dream. You know, he's scaled the mountains of ignorance. He's about to conquer the highest peak. And as he pulls himself over that final rock, he's greeted by a band of theologians who've been sitting there for centuries. I love that. You don't have to trade in your brain to say, you know, maybe God does some amazing things. In fact, your brain should tell you that God does incredibly amazing things. What you have to trade in is your arrogance. The arrogance you have that says, yeah, I know how I did that. I understand it. Yeah, that was nothing. I got that figured out. Can you believe that God does some amazing things that you don't understand? Then you can see God making some, doing some amazing things in your life. Right thinking about God. It acknowledges that He's worthy of worship. It acknowledges that He is worthy of our faith. And third, it acknowledges that He's trustworthy. He's worthy of our trust. You know, I think the people of Nazareth and you and I tend to react against things we don't expect because we have trouble trusting God. I remember 13 years ago when I came to Kerwinsville, I'd been in my first church for 10 years, and a guy I only knew for a few months, he'd just come into the Nazarene church in town. He'd heard that I was going to Kerwinsville. He heard that it was an aging congregation, an older congregation compared to the 20-somethings that were at Bradford. And he came up to me into my office. He sat down in my office, and I thought, wow, what's Tony doing here, you know? I said, hey, Tony, good to see you. What's up? And he said, hey, I just want to say I'm glad for you that you're moving on to Kerwinsville. Glad that God's working in your life. And I wonder if I could give you a little bit of counsel. I said, yeah, I'll take some counsel. He said, Steve, I've only known you for a few months, but here's what I know about you. You love to surprise people. You love to surprise people, to say the unexpected, to do the unexpected. You would pop out of a cake if you could get away with it, you know? I said, yeah, you're right. That's true. And then he said this. He said, old people don't like surprises. Yeah. That's probably part of the reason I've been able to last 13 years here, because I took that to heart. You know, like I said, you think I got rough edges now, man. You should have known me 15 years ago. Well, I got news for Tony. Nobody likes surprises. I mean, you'll take a surprise, like maybe if your husband surprises you with some lilacs on a Saturday morning, you know. You'll take a surprise, maybe if somebody sends you a card in the mail, that's a good kind of surprise. But the kind of surprises that life throws at us, when a doctor looks up and says, I have some bad news, don't like those kind of surprises. The kind of surprise that says, when the boss calls you in and says, don't bother taking off your coat, I don't like those kind of surprises. The kind of surprise that greets us with something we do not want to hear makes it very difficult for us to trust that there's a God in heaven who really is looking out for us. And if we will not choose to trust Him, He won't do many miracles here. He won't. If you want to break free from the bond of reactionism, then you need to begin to trust God. Seeing God works in miraculous ways. It all begins with right thinking about God. John Soper is a Christian and Missionary Alliance pastor. He's also in leadership in the Alliance, and he is writing a lot of new membership material for the Alliance. He was a speaker at the young adult services in Mahaffey this year. How many were at those services? Anybody at those afternoon services? That's hard to get to, I know. I want to encourage you to go to Mahaffey Camp, because the speakers at Mahaffey Camp, you won't find them elsewhere in Clearfield County. Robbie Zacharias has been there. Lots of A.W. Tozer. I'd encourage you to go whenever you can. John Soper was there, and I happened to have the recording of this on MP3, so I was listening to it this past week. Soper told a story of a little girl from his church where he was pastoring who'd had a seizure. The parents were new Christians, and the girl had a seizure. He got the call that she was in the emergency room, so he did what every good pastor does. He hopped in his car, and he headed down to the hospital. When he arrived in the room, they let him go right into the room where she was, and the parents weren't there, but there was evidence of a lot of activity. There were some machines that had been pushed around and were out of place. There was the stuff on the floor, trash on the floor from things that they'd opened up. But everything was very quiet, and the nurse was kind of taking things off of the little girl there. And while they were still connected, before she pulled the electrodes off, he could see that all the lines were flat. And it was clear what had happened. The parents had already been taken to another room, and Soper didn't know what he should do. He was getting ready to go hunt down the parents, and he sensed just the Holy Spirit saying in his heart, pray for her. Pray for her. And he hesitated because, you know, he thinks immediately, well, Protestants don't pray for the dead. What kind of urging is that? And he wasn't going to do it. But again, the urging came. God said, pray for her. So he cleared his throat. The nurse looked up and he said, may I pray for her? And the nurse mouthed to him, you know she's dead, right? And he said, yes, I know that. But I just want to pray. And then John prayed aloud. Lord, Lazarus was dead for four days, and you could handle that situation. So please, give her back her life. Soper said, man, I felt like an idiot. I didn't know what would happen. He opened his eyes and nothing happened. He was about to leave the room. He was very confused, so he prayed one more time. Nothing happened. And so finally, in a state of complete embarrassment in front of that nurse and total confusion, why would God lead me to do that? He went to hunt down the parents. And when he found these new Christians, they were talking to the doctor and they were witnessing to the doctor. They were talking to him about Jesus and their faith in his time of great loss. And Soper opened up his mouth. He was about to speak to them. And he heard a loud cry from down the hallway. It was a voice saying, I want my mommy. It was the girl who had been dead. Now, God doesn't always do that. That girl was okay. She was alive. Soper himself said, God doesn't always do this. I've tried it other places and God didn't do it. Soper said, I myself have cerebral palsy. And though I can see how God has helped me to be as healthy as I am, he hasn't removed this disease from my body. But I asked God for the life of that girl, and he gave it. He gave it. Now, what do you call that? How do you deal with that? You might say, as a pastor once said to Tony Campolo, you might say, there's just not room in my theology for that sort of thing. Thank God that his theology is a lot bigger than ours, huh? But I would say it's not just our theology that holds us back. I would say these three bonds tie us down and keep us from experiencing that kind of thing in our life. The bond of reductionism, trying to explain everything away. Closely related to that, the bond of rationalization, trying to think we can understand everything. And the bond of reactionism, not wanting to be weird like those other people. And I don't want any bondage to prevent such a thing from occurring in my life. So let's break free of that. Let's do it by worshiping God.